If I was to embarrass someone somewhere by pointing at them and saying, okay, sing something of what you just heard, would you be able to sing back any, all, or none of what you hear in this musical selection? So again, what I want you to be aware of is the following. First, be aware of the relatively conjunct, smooth melodic surface. Number two, I want you to be aware of the fact that the vocal ranges are relatively restricted. No one goes too high, no one goes too low, no one goes too fast, no one goes too slow. And thirdly, do you hear enough memorable melody that if need be, you could sing it back to me after you've heard this excerpt? Carlo Gesualdo, Io Parto, published in 1611. Well, do any of you out there want to sing back any of what you just heard and the last two notes don't count? Yeah, I could have played this same game, frankly, with the Josquin Petite Camusette. I could have played the same game with any of the Palestrina Mass that I've played for you thus far. And that game would be, in talking about Renaissance vocal music, do you remember any of the melodic gestures enough to reproduce them for me? And your answer would probably be no. And then, of course, we've got to ask ourselves that good question. Well, why not? I mean, singers sing melodies that are vocal. And vocal melodies, we tend to think here and now as being tunes. Indeed, a tune is a very special kind of melody, a melody with a beginning, a middle, and an end, a certain rhetorical logic of its own, enough repetition within itself to create memorability. This is the same thing I talked about in a previous lecture apropos of a fugue subject. Fugue subjects have to be memorable, they have to be concise, they have to have melodic ideas within them that can be extracted and recognized later. All of these ideas help to create a tuneful melody, but not in the case of the Josquin, not in the case of the Palestrina, or in this case, in Gesualdo, do we hear what we today would recognize as a tune. Indeed, the concept of tune does not emerge, does not evolve, until we get into the Baroque era. This is vocal music, like the Palestrina, like the Josquin des Prez Petite Camusette, which is utterly dependent on articulation of its words to create its vocal continuity, both rhythmically and in terms of its pitches. I'll say that again because it's so important. Renaissance vocal music, which means the great bulk of Renaissance music, has a melodic surface that is a reflection of the articulation of the words being sung. Not some a priori melodic idea asserted on those words, but rather what we get is a through-composed texture. The melody keeps changing as the words keep changing. And so, to our modern ears, this is not tuneful when compared to Baroque-era melody or more recent melody. Now, let's do an immediate comparison. Let's listen, if that was typical Renaissance melody, let's listen to some typical High Baroque melody, in this case, an instrumental melody. I'm going to play you from Bach's own violin concerto in E major, BWV 1042, the third movement. This piece, like the fugue we just listened to, dates from about 1720, and this is what I want you to be aware of. We're going to hear a busy, ornate, gigaw-filled melodic idea, and then when the solo violin comes in, oh, embellishments and ornaments and stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff. You would think that this would be overly complex, much too complicated to follow, that there'd be nothing to remember, but you'd be wrong if you thought that. Because underlying all this complexity is an extremely memorable melody. Indeed, it is instrumentally conceived. It's not something you'd sing. It's much easier to play. It's too complicated to sing, as opposed to the Gesualdo, which was vocally conceived. But the Bach is more memorable because Bach has a melody that keeps coming back and back and back.